Good afternoon. Welcome to the Nebraska Court of Appeals. I am Mike Kirtle from Omaha, and I'm pleased to be joined today on my right by Judge Francie Reedman from Gretna, and on my left from Judge Dave Arterburn from Papillion. We would appreciate if you keep the mask on while you're in the courtroom until you come up to the podium and then start your argument, and then you can remove the mask. And then once we're finished, if you will exit at these doors, that'll allow the next case to come in without any traffic problems. Any questions by either counsel?
There you are.
Is appellant ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Matthew Hardy on behalf of the appellant, Margie Briscoe. It pleases the court, counsel, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. At various times, as the court's probably aware, in 2018, the appellant was operating a grill out of her private residence in Madison, Nebraska. She called this grill Honey Badgers, and the problem she ran into is she was accused on two separate occasions by the city of Madison of violating a city ordinance prohibiting the operation of a restaurant outside of a commercially zoned area within city limits. Ms. Briscoe was successful at trial. The first time she was charged because of a failure of proof. The second time she had the trial, she was convicted, and it was a separate alleged offense, so there's not a double jeopardy problem. The main crux of our argument in this appeal, really it comes down to the issue of the sale, retail sale of beverages. Backing up a little bit, it goes to the definition of a restaurant, because that's what she's accused of doing, operating the restaurant outside of a commercially zoned area. The definition of a restaurant under the city ordinance is an establishment that offers for retail sale food and beverages. It's food and beverages in the conjunctive. There are or is a separate provision within the ordinances that goes to the issue of an establishment offering only beverages for sale. It's a cocktail lounge. So there is a distinction between an establishment offering only beverages versus one offering food and beverages. Now, the evidence in this case that discussed beverages is a menu which was received into evidence by the trial court, and the menu expressly identifies beverages as something that is available at Honey Badgers. There's no prices anywhere on the menu for food or beverages, but beverages are there. There was a transaction, which was kind of the core part of this charge, where a woman purchased two cheeseburgers, I think, plus some side items for $32, or she gave $32, and I wouldn't say she purchased them. That was the only evidence about what was actually available to be received from Honey Badgers.
How did she pay for the purchase?
She wrote a check. She wrote a personal check payable to, I believe it was Honey Badgers, and then I think in parentheses it had Margie Briscoe's name next to Honey Badgers. But it was a personal check in the amount of $32. There was no evidence received that either she or the person with whom she was there with that day received any beverages, any drinks of any kind as part of that transaction. So what we have is that transaction, which did not involve beverages, and this menu, which discussed beverages.
So if I come in and I'm not thirsty and I just buy a hamburger or whatever kind of sandwich was for sale, it's still a retail sale of food, isn't it?
Maybe. We'll assume for purposes of argument right now that it was a retail sale of food. And that's another part of our argument, actually. So for now, under this hypothetical, I'll assume that it was a sale of food. That particular transaction you just described did not involve the sale of beverages. So any evidence of the sale of beverages would have to come from some other source other than that exact transaction. For example, the menu that was received, I believe it was Exhibit 7. Which specifically listed beverages, lemonade, sun tea, and something else. But there's no evidence that those beverages were for sale, or even, or otherwise.
They could have. They're on the menu.
They are on the menu. Certainly, they're on the menu, but the menu doesn't contain anything about prices. There was no evidence received that the beverages were not, that they could have been, come on in, get a burger, we'll give you a free drink. It could be an inducement, free beverages as an inducement to get people to come to Honey Badgers, whether things are for sale or not.
Does the ordinance require an actual sale?
Yes.
In violation of the ordinance?
Yes. Retail sale is expressly in the ordinance. And so...
A minute ago, you said offering retail sale was the definition of the ordinance. An offering for retail sale is something different than an actual retail sale, is it not?
I would say that they are different, offering for sale versus being for sale, but there's no evidence here that what beverages were offered.
What does the ordinance say?
About?
Does it say offering or does it say actual, or does the ordinance itself require the sale?
The ordinance, Your Honor, if I can look at my brief and I can tell you what the ordinance says. Proposition of law. Give me a moment while I find it. A restaurant under the city ordinance is an establishment. It is use engaged in the preparation and retail sale of food and beverages. And it goes on.
That's the definition of restaurant.
Right, right.
Okay.
It does not say offer.
So what is the operative part of the statute that says your client doing what she did is a violation? What part of the ordinance, where is that part of the ordinance?
I'm a little confused about that myself.
Where is the prohibition?
I'm a little confused about that myself. That's why we're here, I think, is because we allege, or the point is, we were not selling beverages as part of and there's no evidence that Ms. Briscoe or the appellant was retail selling beverages. We have another part of our argument which discusses whether any of this transaction actually was a sale, a retail sale or not. But even if you assume, arguendo, that it was a retail sale of food, there's no evidence that this transaction involved the retail sale of beverages, nor that any other transaction involved the retail sale of beverages. And certainly we have the menu, which specifically says beverages. There's no prices on there. I don't think the appellee could identify how much the appellant charged for beverages if she sold them. The appellee could not identify whether the appellant was giving beverages away as part of for example, as an inducement to have people come purchase food. That evidence just was not received.
What was it? Were there prices for the food on the menu?
No. The only mention of prices on any sort of a written document was two exhibits which were received that discussed donations that were suggested to be made. There's no evidence that money had to be given in order to receive any product from Honey Badgers. Ms. Briscoe, the appellant, testified that she had in the past given food to people that did not have money to make a donation. There's no evidence that Ms. Lopez, who wrote the check in this case, was required to pay money in order to receive the food products that she acquired. The evidence that she testified to was she asked how much she owed for the burgers, and the appellant said $32, at which point Ms. Lopez then wrote the check.
There's a merchant. There's a lot of, for instance, maybe used furniture places that don't have prices on, or antique shops that don't have prices on items and you haggle over it. Does that make them not retail sales?
No.
Because they don't put a price on on their product?
No, that's not dispositive. It's evidence. It's evidence, but the rest of that transaction in that secondhand store example would, I guess, show the court, the trial court, that if that were the issue, that there had been a retail sale. In this case, there's no set price. There's no real haggling. It's a donation. It's not consideration. That's what's necessary in order for there to be a sale. There must be consideration in exchange for the product. Now, in this example, Ms. Lopez gave her $32, that was not consideration. It was a gratuity. She could have received the burgers even in the absence of the $32.
Well, so is the evidence in conflict? Because she testified, I asked how much I owed, and I was told $32.
I think the meaning of the evidence is in conflict. We agree that that question was asked.
Review of the evidence.
Well, on this case, it's plain. Well, with it being plain error, we suggest that the court can just look at the evidence on its face and realize that in the context, the court has abused its discretion, or it was clearly wrong to find that at the end of the trial, the state had met its burden to show retail sale, which is one of the elements.
Is there a problem here when the check was specifically made to your client as opposed to being left blank to the payee or made out to Habitat for Humanity?
I think that created some confusion. Had a check been written, for example, to Habitat for Humanity, maybe it would have been less of a question. But the big issue is the product could have been given to Ms. Lopez, even if Ms. Lopez had declined to make any payment. She didn't see a sign that talked about donations. She testified, but the sign was received into evidence. It was there. She did not provide consideration. She provided a gratuitous donation.
So you're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors. Appreciate the opportunity.
How much did we take him over?
35 seconds.
Let's add that to the appellees, please. You may approach.
Sure.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. If it may please the court, I'm Mike Brogan from Brogan and Stafford in Norfolk. Among my duties, I have the honor of being a part-time city attorney for a couple of communities in Madison County, including the city of Madison, population 2,500. Most of our ordinance violations, maybe a handful in a year, consist of loud barking dogs or in-town speeding tickets. It's really once in a blue moon, and by that I mean once in the life of this lawyer, when we even have a zoning violation case like this one. I think most residents have a general feel for what you do in a residential neighborhood. You don't build a factory there. You don't have a restaurant. I want to make it clear that it was never the city's intent to put Ms. Briscoe-Cowan out of business. She simply needs to move her establishment a few blocks to the east where it is commercially zoned. There's a lot to unpack from the brief of the appellant, but among the items discussed here today was the question of beverage sale. And I agree with the justices who addressed it that offering to sell beverages is the same as selling it in this context. The first case that the appellant was successful at that is not before this court, the county judge said, well, you need to have a sale. And so we went back a second time with a sort of a sting operation of the nature of, well, what the state patrol does when they send in a minor to a convenience store and have them buy alcohol and see if they check their ID. This was the first time for us, but the two witnesses, Ms. Lopez was the primary one. She offered the check and in return for that money, received two burgers and a side of potatoes, but did not order a beverage. However, the menu, which the evidence shows was available on site and also was on the Facebook page, which advertised the operation and which Facebook page still exists today, inviting the public to come in and have these refreshments. So I do think it was an offer that those beverages, non-alcoholic beverages, were made available, and that fits within the definition of a restaurant as defined by that section of the zoning ordinance. In answer to the other question, where is the violation? You look to a separate page of that exhibit, I think it's Exhibit 1, where it has a land use matrix, which is implemented by the codifiers. And that zoning code is very similar to the kind of comprehensive plan and zoning code that a lot of other cities use, including my hometown, Norfolk, which has tens of thousands of people in it. And it shows which zones permit the operation of certain kinds of businesses, such as restaurants, properly defined.
Council, is there somewhere, though, in the statute, and I know that the entire zoning code wasn't received into evidence. I'm sure that would have been quite lengthy.
Yes.
But is there some place in the zoning code that says you cannot, you know, that refers to the grid or something that says you cannot do a prohibited activity unless it's zoned?
Yes.
You know, and that's what I don't see in the record. Is that part of the ordinance?
That is a good point. However, the county court and most of the courts don't want us offering the whole 168 pages of the zoning code. If we had offered that book, it would have had the philosophical explanation and the key code for the matrix table and all of that. But in order not to fill up the record with additional pages that generally weren't used, we only offered the sections that were particularly relevant. We didn't have any notice from the defendant back when she was a defendant, before she was an appellant, that she was going to attack the code itself. In fact, the trial counsel, not the counsel who's present today, said no objection when those sections of the code were offered. So
the issue I'm raising wasn't raised at trial.
Correct.
Okay.
I want to move to the second assignment of error, which we did not get to talk to the appellant about, and I think you referred to a sting operation. Is it my understanding that it was your wife, who is a paralegal in your office, as well as this other woman, were specifically sent to the appellant's property to make this purchase and to get this evidence? Is that correct?
Well, they volunteered. My dilemma was I attempted to find residents in town Madison to do this, but none of them wanted to come forward, fearing retaliation from the appellant. So it had to be someone from outside that community. And my paralegal wife did volunteer to take her friend in and make a purchase like that. And that's how it came to be. I did not ask them, but even if I had, it was really Ms. Lopez that was the principal witness. I think my wife, Stephanie Brogan, was more on the order of a corroborative witness. Ms. Lopez was the one that wrote the check, and Stephanie verified that, yes, it transpired the way that Ms. Lopez testified at the trial.
I'm sorry. My concern is not so much that that's what transpired up to that point. My concern is then when you decided to prosecute the case and remain as the prosecutor, knowing that you had been involved in that sting operation and that this was your wife and that you were going to be calling her as a witness and taking direct examination from her, and that you allowed yourself to continue in that role as prosecutor. And I know that, I believe the record indicates the trial counsel moved to recuse you on that basis, and you did not voluntarily agree to do that when the judge overruled that motion. And I have to tell you, I am very bothered that any prosecutor would proceed in this fashion, especially given an advisory opinion from back in 1995 and other case law and provisions of our professional responsibility. So how is it that this appellant was treated fairly when you prosecuted and your wife was a witness?
Well, first of all, there is no law in case law in Nebraska that would prohibit the judge from proceeding in this circumstance.
I'm asking, why wouldn't you have voluntarily agreed not to prosecute this case and get somebody else to prosecute it? Or when the trial counsel brought this to the court's attention, you would have agreed that somebody else should assume the role of prosecutor at this point?
Well, one answer is limited or no resources to do that. The other is that I didn't have any personal interest in having this particular person there as a witness. The cases from other jurisdictions say there may be a conflict of interest if the party that I'm prosecuting is a relative, family member, or a good friend. That wasn't the case here. Margie Briscoe was not a relative or other family member of myself or my wife.
Had your wife been the wife of the judge instead of you, do you think that judge would have continued to act and hear that case?
No, because the judge is the decider. The attorneys are the presenters of the facts. And I think the judge in this case, both the county judge and the district court judge, were able to look at the facts as they came out and judge the credibility of the witnesses and give them the proper weight, even knowing the relationship that was involved there.
At the time of the trial, were you aware of the advisory opinion from the Attorney's Ethics Council that specifically dealt with a similar situation like this and said that the prosecutor should not act as a prosecutor in that case if his or her spouse was going to be a witness?
The 1995 one?
Right.
No, that was not raised. In fact, I reviewed it in preparation for the brief for this court, and a new rules of conduct were approved by the Nebraska Supreme Court and Court of Appeals in 2005.
But I don't think that opinion has been withdrawn.
Okay.
In the State versus McSwain case, the Supreme Court said public prosecutors are charged with the duty to conduct criminal trials in such a manner that the accused may have a fair and impartial hearing. Do you believe this was a fair and impartial hearing?
Yes. And the attorney for the appellant believes so too. He stated in his brief that he was not claiming that there was any violation of the ethical code.
But he's saying that the motion to recuse should have been sustained.
He didn't address it today. He did.
In his brief.
He did mention it in the brief, and that was about half of the brief. I have been on. I have volunteered for review committees and disciplinary boards through the Bar Association in this court for a number of years throughout the 1980s and 1990s. And I generally know, I have a feel for what an attorney's professional obligation is to the bar. Certainly in retrospect, I would have done this again a different way. But at the time, we didn't have the resources, and this was all we could do to protect the citizens of Madison from having a violation in their midst.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How far did we take him over?
35 seconds.
Do we have any rebuttal time left?
No.
Do you want 35 seconds for a rebuttal?
Oh, sure.
Thank you. Quickly to the point of the city ordinance not being completely on the record, we certainly understand that 168 or so pages would be an inefficient use of the court's resources there in Madison County. But the specific part that specifically identified the key to reading the code or the chart in the record that says things are prohibited or allowed, that key could have been part of the exhibit. The specific language prohibiting the use of, operating a restaurant in a non-commercial area, that specific part could have been included as well. We didn't need all 168 pages, but
was that raised at trial?
I do not believe that was raised at trial. Trial counsel did not object to the exhibit as offered, but at the same time, it's not the defendant's job to point out shortcomings in the evidence to the prosecutor.
So. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for being here. The case is submitted.